Good evening and a warm welcome to the show, Gnostic Waves Radio, where we talk about all things of a mystical, philosophical and psychological nature. You're with Diana Azam, that's myself, and if you ever want any more information on the program, like past show recordings, track listing, extra resources, then head to the website gnosticwaves.com and hopefully it should sort you out. Okay, so this week we have returning to the show a very special guest speaker, Carly Samish, Gnostic instructor from the other side of the world in Portland, Oregon. So hello, are you there, Carly?
Yes, hi Diana.
And welcome back.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
It's our pleasure. So Carly is on the show today to talk to us on the very intriguing topic of the fourth dimension. So Carly, why this topic?
Well, it's really useful to study the fourth dimension because it's an aspect of our lives that it's like the invisible aspect of our lives. And the fourth dimension is time. We may have heard that, like, that's what the fourth dimension is. But, you know, time is something that we're in constant relationship with, but we may not necessarily be aware of it. So it's really useful to study it. Samael Onvior writes a lot about the fourth dimension, as well as the fifth dimension, the sixth dimension, and so on. And it ties into study of Kabbalah and the Tree of Life. So it's a very interesting topic. But yeah, we could just focus on the fourth dimension for this talk.
Okay, fantastic. So, yeah, please go ahead.
Okay. So when we're studying these topics, these, you know, philosophical, mystical topics and Gnostic studies, we're trying to learn how to awaken our consciousness and to become more conscious in our day, more alert, and to discover things that that we weren't aware of before. And sometimes it's just a subtle process of, you know, everyday things that we didn't perceive that we suddenly become aware of. It's this like gradual process of awakening. The Theosophist Charles Leadbetter, he said, it's the commonest of mistakes to believe that the limit of our perception is also the limit of all there is to perceive. So, we tend to just think of ourselves in the three-dimensional sense and just the material world and materialism. But as I said, the fourth dimension is this this invisible dimension that we are in constant relationship with. So the fourth dimension is time, as I mentioned, and all day long we're relating to time. You know, we're rushing to not be late, we're hurrying, we're wondering where the time went, we're absorbed in something, you know, or it's like we're bored and we're wishing the time would hurry up and pass. So it's like time kind of fluctuates based on our psychological state. So it's really useful to start to examine the role that time has in our lives. And so we hear this phrase, you know, especially in these studies of meditation, to be in the moment and be in the now. But you know, for any of us who have worked with practicing mindfulness and practicing meditation, we know that, you know, sometimes it can be difficult to actually find that balance and let go of the past and let go of the future and be really perfectly attuned to the present moment, which is always moving and changing. So that's that. You know, that balancing act we sometimes discover is the challenge with meditation. So there's this elusiveness that we have with time, this elusiveness with the present moment. And this is because we have our consciousness trapped in this three-dimensional world. We see ourselves, we believe ourselves to be just these three-dimensional objects, these bodies that move within a three-dimensional world, you know, kind of encountering these other three-dimensional objects, you know, other people, just the things in our lives, our house, and so forth. And then so we have our psychology trapped in this limit of time and space, this three-dimensional limitation. But the fourth dimension, it's not necessarily that abstract, although there is a more mathematical abstract way of understanding it, which is not the way I understand it. So, but I understand the fourth dimension as time, by definition, because it's movement. So one way of understanding this is that we sort of measure distance in terms of time. So, for example, I'm in Portland, and if I was to fly on a plane to New York, it would take 5 hours. So we say, oh, it's 5 hours to New York. That's the distance. But we're saying it in terms of time. But if I was to take the train instead of the plane, it would take maybe like 4 days. So then all of a sudden the distance is longer because the time is longer rather because the speed is different, the velocity is different. So understanding movements, the role movement has in the fourth dimension is really interesting. And movement also is what defines all the dimensions. So so when we usually teach the fourth dimension, we explain all the dimensions leading up to it. So there's actually something called the zero dimension, and it's just a point in space. It's just a point. But when that point is in movement, so it's in a trajectory, then it becomes a line. So you can sort of visualize this, just a point, and then like a point of a pen, and it just moves and it's a line. And then that's what we call the first dimension, is the line. So from the zero to the first dimension. And when that line is in motion, so like sweeping to the side, we can sort of picture, then it creates a plane, like a square plane, which is the second dimension. So it's just a flat dimension. And then that plane in motion, so it's almost like we imagine it's like a flat piece of paper kind of like popping up, becomes a three-dimensional object. But we can see how all these dimensions are created by the previous dimension being in movement and being on a trajectory. So then a three-dimensional object in motion is existing in time. So the fourth dimension. So a really simple way of understanding the fourth dimension is if, you know, I get up and I walk across the room. So I'm a three-dimensional object moving in time and space and therefore in the fourth dimension. And, you know, so many moments have happened from, you know, sitting in the chair to moving across the room. So starting to look at it that way, we can really see how movement is that invisible factor that kind of shapes our existence and shapes our psychology that we don't sort of realize. So the poet John Goethe, some of us may have heard of him. He also studied botany. He did a lot of different types of science. And he observed plants, you know, in a scientific manner, but he also always observed them in terms of time and growth. So he was always including the fourth dimensional aspect in his study of this living thing, this plant, not just, you know, observing it once, you know, noting the color, the size, the properties, but how it was over time, which I think is really fascinating. Yeah, just wanting to emphasize that that all things are moving and all things are growing, and the reality that nothing is static and everything is always changing. So that's also a Buddhist teaching of impermanence. Everything is always changing because that fourth dimensional aspect is, it precedes our three dimensional aspect, really, if we're thinking in terms of Kabbalah and the Tree of Life, which I know you've been talking about in some of the other talks. We have sort of those higher dimensions that come first. So we have, you know, these finer dimensions, the seventh dimension, sixth dimension, fifth dimension, where we have these divine aspects, kind of this divine will that comes down and becomes causality and becomes thoughts, becomes feelings, and becomes movement, functionality. And then we would say from there, it becomes actual structure in three dimensions. But, we're studying the fourth dimension, which is sort of that bridge in between the spiritual realms and planes and our physical life that we're familiar with.
Carly, just before you go on, are you saying that in each of the spheres of the Kabbalah or dimensions essentially are the previous one in motion or in movement, in action?
That's one way to think about it. Yeah, definitely.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah. So, so back to just some things with time. So we have Einstein who developed many, theories related with time and dimensions. And so he has a theory of relativity that states that distance and time are not absolute, which is really fascinating because, again, just in our normal lives, we know that there's hours and minutes and seconds, and they're all, very consistent. But Einstein is saying that really, in kind of the big picture, it's not absolute. The clock, the rate that a clock will tick can depend on the motion of the observer of that clock. Even things in relation to something with a large mass and the gravity of that mass, so say like the sun, it can warp time and space around it. So clocks would actually tick more slowly the closer they are to a gravitational mass like the sun. So it's really fascinating just to see that, time and space as we understand it just on our Earth is not the same way every place, even just in our solar system. So gravity can affect intervals of time and space and motion. I gave that example of, flying to New York versus from Portland versus, taking the train, and how, velocity will change the distance, and therefore we're sort of saying time changes space. So time is relative, it's not fixed, and time can be transcended, which is really a key thing to understand in these in these spiritual studies and these mystical studies where we're wanting to explore these different realms ourselves and experience them. So when we're talking about the fourth dimension is time, then we say that that which is beyond time is eternity. So again, back to that, the tree of life, if the fourth dimension is the realm of yesod and that vital energy, that vital movement of the physical, then eternity is beyond even that. And eternity exists in the astral plane and the mental plane and the realms beyond that. So eternity has time within it, but it's this higher dimension, or higher vibration rather, of the third and fourth dimension. And we can access this in the physical body when we change our vibration. And it doesn't have to be necessarily that mysterious. It starts with sort of a psychological change. So again, back to meditation and learning how to silence the mind and to really catch that present moment and have that psychological space and not being so sort of trapped in past or the future and the thoughts, and it starts to actually change our vibration, and we can experience in glimpses that which we call eternity, those dimensions that are beyond time. And some of us may have experienced that in meditation of feeling like only a moment went by and it was just very peaceful, but hours have gone by in the meditation. And we can also experience that in the day, with the mindfulness practice. It's also the same thing. Time can seem to slow down. Time can seem to stop. All of a sudden there's just all this space and the busyness is sort of gone, but nothing has really changed other than ourselves, our perception, our psychology. So within that present moment, there's so much richness and there's so much to discover, without necessarily anything, changing in our lives, without necessarily being in, the perfect environment, the monastery, or being at the beach or something like that. Just in our daily lives, we can discover eternity within every moment.
Wow, that's pretty profound.
Yeah, it is wonderful. It's amazing.
We'll just take a short music break. So tell us a bit about the piece that you've chosen for today.
It's a flute piece by Mary Youngblood, who's a Native American, and she's pretty famous. I think she won like the Grammy or something for this album, but it was recorded in a cave in Moaning Caverns. So just deep within the silence of this cave, and it's just a flute, and all the recording equipment, everything is actually on site within this cave, and so there's just a sense of timelessness, of peace. With music like this, there's those little spaces in between the notes. You can really have an exercise in being present and being in the moment listening to it.
Okay, well, we'll be back after this music break on Gnostic Waves Radio. And you've been listening to a track called The Offering by Mary Youngblood, chosen by our guest speaker, Carly Samish, who's a Gnostic instructor joining us from Portland, Oregon. So she's talking on the fourth dimension. Carly.
All right. So it's lovely to hear that track. And it reminded me from, I think, a couple weeks ago, you had another speaker on, Brett, and he had a really nice Japanese flute. And I was thinking about that because I really enjoyed it, and also because the next section we're talking about mindfulness, and I'll talk a little bit about the samurai. So anyways, thinking about Japanese flute. So in speaking about the idea of time can be transcended and, you know, working with the fourth dimension in our daily life, so I have a quote from Hagakure, which is the Book of the Samurai, and he says, there is surely nothing other than the single purpose of the present moment. A man's whole life is a succession from moment after moment. There will be nothing else to do and nothing else to pursue. Live being true to the single purpose of the moment. So I was really struck by that because it's, you know, it's the book that the samurai live by. And of course, the samurai were very much influenced by Zen. So there's so many parallels between the practices of the monks, the Zen monks who are trying to be still and meditate and reach enlightenment. And then these samurai warriors that we think of as being so active in the world. And, but understanding the present moment, which Master Samael calls the doctrine of momentariness. So just really understanding deeply the present moment. It's understanding the potency of, like, how important and potent the present moment actually is. And in meditation, as I was describing, we can penetrate into the present moment and have these experiences of eternity, and among other things. And the samurai warriors tap into this potency of the present moment to just be supremely present, to be able to fight, and then also to be on their path of Bushido, which is the way of the samurai, which is a whole another topic, which is really interesting. But so the present moment, it isn't a static state. And this is useful to understand, again, if we're doing this meditation practice that involves, you know, being still. But actually being present is a type of action. And, you know, so we look to these samurai warriors, and they're extremely patient. They're extremely alert, and they know exactly when to act. So they act at the exact right moments. They waste no time and energy, either in their movements, their physical movements, or just in, you know, when they've chosen to act. And it's, you know, it becomes a spiritual path in and of itself. So the present moment is actually functioning. It's when we're functioning in real time. So time, you know, imagine time sort of flowing like this river. And we're not kind of like standing in the river and pushing against it. We're actually being completely present with time as it's passing and flowing. And so it's like, you know, that samurai warrior being active and alert and awake, and because everything is constantly changing, everything is constantly flowing. But what's sort of paradoxical is in the state of alert novelty, as Samuel calls it, and being awake, time can actually seem to slow down or stop. So again, it's sort of like if we're kind of floating down, or maybe swimming down with the river, and we're just in the same pace, I guess, with the river flowing, it doesn't seem like the water is passing. We're just with it. So then to continue that analogy, we could say, we're sitting in our meditation practice, we're being present, every moment is arising, and we're with it, we're present, we're with it. But then to become attached to a memory or attached to a fantasy is like sort of getting sidelined and getting stuck in sort of a whirlpool, and it creates a latency, and it creates this sort of pattern that's outside the flow of real time. So when we're stuck in a memory, we're not present with the moment. We're acting from all these past impressions and all these past habits and behaviors, ways of acting, ways of thinking and feeling that aren't necessarily applicable to what's happening now. So just really understanding that movement is such a useful key to understanding our lives, and to not be so willing, not to cling and to want things to be the same all the time, because as I say, impermanence, it's that Buddhist teaching, and it's the reality, and nothing really can stay the same. And it enables us to be flexible and adaptable when we're present. So I've noticed, people I know who've had, very serious spiritual practices, meditation practices for many years, they know when to act, they know when to rest. There's sort of a timing aspect, like a good timing aspect, to just how they live. That's, with serenity and tranquility, but then also kind of a right action, which is really wonderful. So again, and back into the sort of dimensional realm, those whirlpools I was speaking about, those habits, those thoughts getting stuck in the past or stuck in the future. Also, a fantasy is also kind of a whirlpool. It's more of like a three-dimensional state. It's like, then we're back in just the three dimensions and we're forgetting about time and change and also those possibilities of those other mystical dimensions, the eternity and those other divine realms. And in Gnosis, in Gnostic psychology, we would call those, what I'm calling whirlpools, is the ego. So you'd say the water that isn't flowing, it's sort of in this fixed pattern, but it's cosmic energy, it's vital energy that isn't flowing. It's just become trapped, it's become conditioned, it's become just stuck in a pattern. And we want to be able to free it and to let it flow again. So the psychological work is about, discovering, seeing that we have these egos, these whirlpools, these areas of stagnation and static. It's keeping us trapped and learning to liberate that and create this psychological transformation.
I really appreciate this explanation through movement and this thing of moving on, mm-hmm. as in from this whirlpool, to actually get out of it and to keep flowing in
definitely time. Yeah, definitely. I definitely want to speak a little bit about just a practical aspect of that. So there's this idea of qi in Chinese medicine. I've also been studying Chinese medicine. And so qi is an idea that we're, constantly working with. And qi is movement. And so in Chinese medicine, to be perfectly healthy and balanced, the body needs to move. So just on like a very basic practical level, movement equals health, basically. So then we have Tai Chi, Qigong practices. It doesn't have to be strenuous or anything like that, but the body does need to move to be healthy, just as, psychologically we have to be able to move and flow, to be psychologically healthy. So it's sort of stagnation that is the root of all different sorts of, emotional and mental and physical problems. So I've just been interested because qi is often translated as energy, or it's explained as energy, as like sort of energetic channels. But really I think of it as just movement and functionality and growth. So qi is just the actual, the structures, like the physical structures that we have, but in movement and functioning in real time, functioning in the fourth dimension. And when the ancient Chinese, thousands and thousands of years ago, were really developing the system and depicting it, it was with, more of an awakened consciousness and more of an understanding that the fourth dimension was just a natural part of life. And so sometimes you'll see these drawings, these depictions of like an anatomical, like an ancient anatomical picture of a person with the, the qi channels, and And the structure doesn't look very realistic. You know, it looks kind of like a blob looking person with, you know, with kind of like the lines drawn, but it wasn't about the importance of the body structure so much. It was really about how it moved, how the different systems in the body interact. And it's a very elegant and sophisticated way of understanding the physical body, really. But, you know, of course, with our Western minds and Western medicine, we're sort of based more on just the physical structure and what we can see. And a lot of it is from the dissection of corpses, which is that's about as three-dimensional as you get. You know, there's no more movement. So we're trying to explain, with Chinese medicine, sometimes we're trying to explain a fourth-dimensional process and understanding of the body in three dimensions. So it's challenging sometimes, but the takeaway from that is that health is movement, you know, at a basic level. So I guess the last thing I want to talk about also, it's an important thing with the fourth dimension. So Samael Unvior teaches about the fourth dimension, and he teaches that we can create such a profound psychological shift in ourselves with meditation practices, with mantras, that we can actually enter our physical body into the fourth dimension or the Jin state. And he speaks a lot about this in his books. It's fascinating, really fascinating topic. So it's different than even like going out of the body consciously, going into the astral plane. It's actually bringing the body into a state where it's no longer bound by time and space, but can, you know, can go anywhere, travel, but with the physical body, change shape shifting, you know, all these sorts of things. he speaks about secret temples that have been moved into the Jin state. So, you know, so entire just civilizations and cities are in the Jin state, making them completely invisible to us who are, you know, identified with the third dimension. So I definitely just wanted to mention that because it's, it really is an interesting topic of study.
Definitely. And also I think in a lot of, you know, those sci-fi films where, you know, people travel through hyperspace.
That's right. Yeah.
Same thing. Yep.
Yeah, that's exactly it. That reminds me, when I was doing some research for this talk, whenever I want to research a subject, I always like to just go to the search engine and look at the images and just kind of scroll through and just see, like, you know, any given topic, like what colors come up or what like general things come up. And if you just look up the fourth dimension and look at you know, just all the images, and they're very mathematical, very abstract, kind of just diagrams and, you know, kind of cold and yeah, I guess abstract is the word. So I really want to strive to bring it a little bit closer to home. But yeah, I think the main thing I want to say is that just remembering that impermanence, that time aspect is absolutely a part of our lives, and you know, things are constantly changing. What's a crisis now will transform into something joyful. You know, we're sick now, we'll transform into healing. You know, vice versa. So everything we're encountering is all part of this continuum, and we have access to the eternity within that.
Okay. I just had something that I was, you know, thinking about, is this perception of time and how that is relative, and how when you're busy, like say you're at work and you've got all this stuff to do, that time goes really quickly. But then when you know, sort of bored, you don't have much on, then time tends to drag. And then I was relating that to meditation and how it seems like the more we meditate, it's like we're buying ourselves more time.
Yeah, I think that's very true. And it's funny how we can so casually say that. We've all, you know, noticed that, oh, I'm so bored, time is dragging, or oh, I'm so busy, where did the time go? But it's actually really a profound observation of our lives and what our lives consist of. And meditation can be such a stark way to kind of see where we're at. You know, if we're completely bored during meditation, you know, we're kind of stuck. But you know, for all of us that have, you know, eventually fallen in love with meditation, we know that it does. Yeah, it gives us more time and more space. Amazingly enough, yeah.
Okay, well, we'll leave it at that, and we will thank you for coming on.
Thank you. Yeah, thanks for having me,
and for making this concept really quite understandable and definitely relatable to, well, at least to myself, and I'm sure to many of the other listeners out there. Carly has a website or a blog site. Did you want to give some information about that?
Oh, sure. So my blog is called Gnosis Northwest, and gnosisnorthwest.com. And it's just a place where I have all kinds of information, basic information on Gnosis, Kabbalah, astrology. Just kind of whatever I'm sort of thinking about at the time. And I try to have some inspirational music on there, inspirational quotes, all sorts of things. So, yeah, so please check it out. You can subscribe and then you'll just get the, the posts as I write them, which is kind of nice. You don't have to remember to check the website. But, and I have, not a comment, but an email, email thing. So I'd love to hear from anyone who has any feedback. And, enjoy sharing the Gnostic information.
Okay, fantastic. Well, we'll just go to a short music break and then we'll be back for the meditation part of this show. So back soon, a bit of Bach to take us there. Okay, and you've just been listening to a piece of music by Bach, Cello Suite number 1 in G major. On the Gnostic Waves radio show. So we've just been learning about the fourth dimension with Carly Samish, a Gnostic instructor from Portland, Oregon. And if you want to read more on the subject, then you can head to gnosticwaves.com. That's GNOSTICWAVES.com. And there's also links to a couple of her articles that are on the website. So do have a read if you want some more information or want a reminder of the content of today's show. And that's the best place to look. And, I put the recordings of the program on there afterwards. So if you missed any part of it or you wanted to hear it again or recommend someone else to listen, then it's available for you. Okay, so now we're going to move on to the meditation part of this segment. And, as always, we try and find a place where we're comfortable and that we won't be interrupted. So we start by placing our attention on the physical body, the physical vehicle. Making sure the body is relaxed, that the spine is as straight as can be without causing discomfort. Checking if we're holding any tension anywhere. In the shoulders, in the arms, in the face. We work with the breath to relax the body, to remove any tension, and to give us a point of concentration. So, trying to get into a pattern of rhythmic breathing. We inhale for, say, 6 seconds or as long as we can manage. We hold the breath, which is what is known as pranayama, for around 6 seconds. And then we exhale to the count of 6 seconds. And we inhale to the count of 6, trying to have as complete a breath as we can, using every part of the lung. We hold for 6 seconds. And then we exhale for 6 seconds. We continue with this counting of the breath in our own time. And then when we feel we've established this rhythmic breathing, we can let go of the counting of the breath. Trying to remain alert at each and every step of the breathing process. The mind may wander elsewhere, but we keep bringing it back into concentrating on the breath. So in this practice, we really want to work hard to remain present in the moment. To establish, to become conscious of the action, the activity in being present. In being passive. Like our speaker Carly was relating the samurai to the Zen meditation, there is a passiveness of being in the moment, living in the moment. But there's also that ability to act, to know when to act. To have alert novelty. So So meditation really is quite active, even though the mind convinces us otherwise, may convince us that we're being lazy or we're avoiding doing the housework or procrastinating. But no, we're actively being present in the moment. So we continue to observe the breath with all our attention. Where is our attention at this moment? Is it on the breath? Or is it in the future? The future does not exist. All that is important is this particular moment. Enjoying where we are, what we're doing. Allowing the moment and everything that comes. Perceiving the richness, the abundance. That we have right now. If your mind is trying to convince you of something else, just let it go. Where is our attention? Asking ourselves. using the breath to clear anything stagnant, any whirlpools that have formed in our river. Allowing that energy to flow through that chi, the prana, whatever you name it, or however you feel it. It's not so important what it's called. What's important is to allow that energy to flow. What's important is to increase our awareness of each and every moment. To be alert. Alert as a warrior. A peaceful warrior, you could say. Ready to do battle with our incorrect concepts or our false sentiments, with the ego. It's ready to cut down those eyes of anger, of boredom, of apathy, of depression, those eyes of defeatism, eyes are not the true self. Bringing the attention back to the breath. And can we introduce an element of the imagination? Imagining that energy flowing through us, like the river example given before. So whilst the physical body is still and passive, energetically we are flowing. Our internal state is in motion. Using the breath, the imagination, that energy is flowing through all the veins, through all the cells, all the arteries, the organs, into the brain, into the mind, It's replenishing, renewing. It's flowing. This practice, we're really trying to make an impression on the consciousness of how abundant, how fruitful each and every moment is when taken consciously, when being present. Okay, so slowly bringing our awareness back to the body. If we have closed our eyes, we can open them. Trying to maintain that alertness in the moment, in the breath, not to become too identified again with the circumstances of life and in anything we have to do for the rest of the night, the rest of the day, depending where we're listening, then to do it with that sense of peace and presence of the moment. And that brings, or that concludes our show for this week. You've been listening to the Gnostic Waves radio program, broadcasting every week, 6:30 p.m. Tuesday evenings. Thank you very much for joining us. And yes, for any more information on the show, please go to GnosticWaves.com. We welcome any feedback or questions or even requests. So again, thank you. And we look forward to your company next week. So good evening.